This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. Today's program features a discussion with Jihad Watch director Robert Spencer. On May the 3rd in Garland, Texas, two Islamic gunmen, armed with assault weapons, explosives, and wearing body armor, attempted to storm a venue that was featuring caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. The two would-be mass murderers were killed by a police officer before they could enter the building, although one security guard was wounded. This is just the latest in a string of violent actions taken by Islamic extremists directed against those whom they claim insult Islam. But in the aftermath of the incident, criticism has been directed not against the would-be killers, but against those who are drawing the cartoons.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here is news and brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. An organization that tracks the threatened minorities has placed Syria at the top of its annual rankings for the first time, making it one of seven countries in the region where attacks by Islamic State jihadists on Christians and other minorities has worsened the risk of genocide, mass political killing, or systematic violent repression. Syria jumped two places to the top of the 2015 People's Under Threat list compiled by minority rights groups. Six other countries where ISIS is active is featured in the list: Afghanistan in fourth place, Iraq in fifth, Yemen in 11th, Libya the 17th, Egypt the 20th, and Lebanon the 25th. In the space of just 5 days, from May 10th through the 15th, Hindu fundamentalist groups have carried out five separate attacks against Christians in their places of worship in a central Indian state, which is under the authority of the ruling Hindu party. According to Sanjan George, head of the Global Council on Indian Christians, the attacks occurred without provocation or apparent motive, if not for hatred of helpless Christians and the intent to terrorize.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the Wilongasi Lutheran Fihawan.
Robert Spencer is the director of Jihad Watch, and he's been keeping a close eye on various things that have been happening within the Islamic world, particularly as it pertains to Christians and Jews and everyone who is not a Muslim. Recently, one of his colleagues, Pam Geller, with the American Freedom Defense Initiative, had an art contest in Garland, Texas, where they were going to do a Draw Muhammad contest. And as you probably know from the news reports, two Islamic terrorists attempted to disrupt the meeting. In fact, they attempted to kill everyone there. They came in with automatic weapons and explosives, and they wounded one security guard. Fortunately, there was an off-duty police officer who was actually hired to do security there, who shot and killed those two terrorists before they could inflict any damage. Could you give us a little bit of a recap, sir, of how you saw what happened there?
Sure. We had just finished the event. I was the co-sponsor and co-organizer of the event and one of the speakers, and it had just concluded. And one of our security team came in and told us that there had been the shooting outside and had to get us to a safe room, and took Pamela Geller and I off to a guarded room and took the crowd into another area. The whole place was locked down while the surrounding area was searched for additional jihadis and bombs. And then once it was clear, we were able to get out of there. What it was a couple of jihadis from Phoenix who had driven over because they had been looking for a target for a jihad terror attack. And they thought that our free speech event would be a good one. The Islamic jihadis have tried for years to shut down the freedom of speech in the West and to compel the West, intimidate the West into criminalizing criticism of Islam. We've seen, of course, more in that direction in the aftermath of our event, in the calls by the mainstream media to restrict the freedom of speech. This is something that has been going on for years and is going to continue. The objective on the part of the Islamic supremacist groups like the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is 57 Muslim governments around the world, they've been working at the UN for years to restrict the freedom of speech with the objective of making it impossible for the West to fight against jihad terror, because, of course, we wouldn't be able to talk about it.
This is one of the things that has really concerned me. The Islamic terrorists, well, they behave as they as we expect them to. We expect this frontal assault. That's one reason why we had armed guards, and we can fight back, and we can expect it. What has appalled me as an observer is the lack of support from the American mainstream media about freedom of speech. These people seem to be attacking Pam Geller and the organization. That
they seem to be eager to throw it over to discard the freedom of speech.
Well, I look at, for example, Gary Trudeau, the cartoonist who does Doonesbury, who's very, very critical of Ms. Geller and of cartoonists. I just saw a cartoon from the cartoonist who does La Cucaracha, Lalo, I believe is his name, where, again, he goes directly after Ms. Geller for what she had done. The First Amendment, as you know, has five basic freedoms in it, you know, speech, press, religion, petition, and assembly. Without these, we have no democracy, and I am at a loss to explain why people in this country are attacking it. Do you have any speculation on that, sir?
Well, I think they don't understand it, that for years now, the left has put forward the idea of hate speech and the idea that there can be hate crimes. So that if I beat you up and steal your wallet, that's a crime. But if I beat you up and steal your wallet and call you a racial slur, then that's a hate crime. That introduces the concept of hate speech into American legal jurisprudence, and it introduces the idea that there are things that must not be said that do not have freedom of speech protection. And so this is a very dangerous road to go down, because ultimately the person who judges what constitutes hate speech, the person who determines that something is hate speech and something else isn't, is the one who has extraordinary power to control the public discourse and can criminalize dissent from whatever the ruling power may be.
I read recently Jonah Goldberg's Liberal Fascism, and he devotes a great deal of his book to the silencing of dissent. And I think that we're seeing, despite what they call progressivism on campuses, for example, I think really it's a fascist movement. Would my analysis be correct there?
I couldn't agree more. As a matter of fact, the Nazis in the early 30s, they would go around to universities and where there were professors who were anti-Nazi. They would go to their lectures and shout them down, physically menace them, and so on. And this is the kind of thing that we see today. It's the rule of thuggery, and the idea that it has the approval of the intelligentsia and the media and political elites is what's really most disturbing about this.
It really is. One of the things I remember really stuck out in my mind was a photograph I saw of an early book burning in Germany, where they're throwing the books on the bonfire. And the people throwing the books on there weren't the brown shirts. They were the students.
Exactly. And this is the situation that we're in today as well, where students on campuses think that they are fighting for freedom, when really they are being the tools of the forces of oppression and violence and hatred.
How can we combat this? I know your website, Jihad Watch, is more concerned with the Islamic threat, but this is certainly part of it, part of defending our freedom. What do you see we can do, you and I as citizens and as Christians and whatever we are, to help preserve our freedoms?
Well, I think that in the first place, Christians need to understand that this event had to be undertaken. Christians have been quite critical. Even Franklin Graham was very critical of our event and said, it's no good to mock somebody else's religion. While I certainly understand that position, what he doesn't seem to understand is that there's quite a bit more at stake here, that we certainly don't have any interest in mocking anyone's religion, and that's not why we put on the event. The reason why we put it on was because, first and last, people were saying, if you don't obey this part of Islamic law, we will kill you. If you do not abide by Sharia blasphemy laws, we will kill you. Well, Sharia law has a whole lot of things in it that aren't very good for Christians. And if we set the precedent that we will bow to violence and accept Sharia provisions so as to avoid being killed, then we're opening the door to a great deal more of violence and oppression and just encouraging it. And so Christians need to understand that it's in their interest to do this kind of thing, even if they may find it distasteful, precisely because this is the point at which our freedoms are being challenged. If we don't stand up to it, then there will be more challenges to our freedoms, and that will not be good, ultimately, for Christians in the future.
One message that is being sent out by the critics of Ms. Geller and you is that violence works. I can think of very little more offensive than, for example, the art display of the Piss Christ, which is paid for with public funds. Yet, of course, there was no outcry at that. There was no outrage. There was no violence. People were certainly offended, but they weren't violent about it.
At that time, we heard all about how important it was to defend the freedom of speech. Now all that's out the window. It's astonishing hypocrisy on the part of the New York Times and outlets like it, CNN and so on.
The mainstream media certainly would stand to lose, I think, in the long run if there is a censorship going on. But they continue with it. I know one, for example, we see a great deal of criticism leveled at Fox because they don't really toe that one line. President Obama just recently said, well, we have to change the way the media covers the news. This should be bone-chilling. I know it is to me.
It should be. But people don't realize the implications, or they're too busy with the Kardashians or whatever to pay any attention. And they did. I think most Americans have no idea what's coming down. They don't realize how severely the freedom of speech is imperiled and what it would mean not to have it. And I'm afraid that it might be too late before they wake up to it.
Well, one problem we're having here in the Missouri Synod, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is we're facing the gay marriage situation right now, which you know is before the Supreme Court. Now, whether you're for it or against it, our church's doctrine is quite clear. We cannot sanction gay marriage, period. And we are accused of being haters because we follow our doctrine. Not just us. I mean, the Catholics, the Baptists, many, many mainstream faiths follow this. But they're using this this hate speech concept. Where does this hate speech concept come from?
I think that it's a tool of authoritarian government. It's a tool of people who do not believe in free and open discourse and in genuine exchange of ideas. It is a tool of people who want to, instead of debating, demonize and marginalize their opposition so that they are in the public mind, the only acceptable political position available. And that this is what the left in general is trying to do in response to the challenges from the right and challenges to its favored initiatives like gay marriage and others. Instead of debating, instead of discussing, probably because they know they would lose, they are just trying to shut us all down. It's the same thing with dissent from bland acceptance of Sharia and jihad. Idea that you should oppose these things is politically incorrect and unacceptable, and ruled out of the public discourse as hate speech in much the same way. It's just it's a tactic to avoid debate and to shut down debate.
I read a column today. Kirsten Powers has just come out with a book and a column. She, as you know, is on the left, and she was highly critical of this concept of hate speech. Specifically, they were referring to the situation that Christina Hoff Sommers ran into when she was speaking about feminism. And the left had everything from trigger warnings to a supposed safe room because someone might be offended by what she said. So maybe we're finally starting to see a little bit of eye-opening, at least on the left, for a change. I think the right is aware of it, but the left, maybe now we're finally starting to see it.
I hope so. I don't know. I think even, you know, that all that nonsense about safe rooms and trigger warnings and so on, it's essentially telling young people in colleges that they do not have to endure the idea that anybody might disagree with them. And so it's paving the way for an authoritarian society in which only one political position is allowed.
How do we combat this, especially in the campus?
Well, I think we have to stand robustly for the freedom of speech. We put on this Muhammad cartoon contest in Texas, not as a one-off, but in the hopes that everybody who understood the grave threat to the freedom of speech would stand with us. And so there needs to be a contest like this in every city, in every town, in every college, a Muhammad cartoon drawing event to show people we're not going to stand down. We're not going to submit to violent intimidation. We're going to stand up for our freedoms and our rights in this way. I mean, I know that many people will be afraid to do this because they will say, well, we could get hurt. Somebody could get hurt. And this is just the problem. Everyone is bowing to violent intimidation and saying, and essentially sending the message, if we are going to do something that the jihadis don't like, then we better stop doing it. And in other words, all they have to do is show us that they'll kill us and we'll stand down.
Well, I keep thinking of those who actually had courage to oppose totalitarianism at one time. I remember actually just recently saw Charlie Chaplin's classic, The Great Dictator, where he took on the Nazis, you know, just head on before the United States was in the war. And he got a lot of resistance, you know, even from Hollywood about that.
Yeah, well, nowadays Hollywood is on the side of the jihadis. You know, when have you ever seen a film in which Islamic jihadis were the villains? Instead, we have films like, I forget the name of it, but the one with Liam Neeson a few years back, where there's a Muslim who's suspected all the way through, and then it turns out he's the hero, and the people who are looking for him are the villains. And this kind of thing is very commonplace in Hollywood nowadays, that it's trying to send the message, of course, that not all Muslims are terrorists, and not all Muslims are terrorists. But there are Muslim terrorists, and yet they just don't exist in the cinema. It's a sharp contrast to World War II in Hollywood, when many, many films were made that were in aid of the Allied war efforts, and even films that were all about entertainment, like Casablanca, of course, the greatest classic, was a pro-war, pro-America film. And nowadays, it would never be made.
And even those that are come under fire. American Sniper has been banned on certain campuses.
Yes, yes. It's it upsets the poor dears who need trigger warnings and safe rooms and so on. And yet it's just a patriotic film. It's really quite astonishing that a patriotic film would be aroused such controversy nowadays, and it shows what trouble that we're really in.
Also, the political correctness that you were just talking about, like when was the last time you actually saw a movie with an Islamic terrorist? Recently I saw A Sum of All Fears, which is based off Tom Clancy's novel. And I read the novel. In the novel, the bad guys were the Islamics. In the movie, they turned them into German neo-Nazis.
Yes, yes. And that was actually after direct pressure from the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is a Hamas-linked Muslim Brotherhood front group. And it pressured the producers of the film to change the villains on the bogus and spurious claim that that Muslims are being victimized in the United States, and thus it would be bad for the Muslim community to depict some jihad terrorists. Now, you know, you would think that if the Muslim community were really worried about jihad terrorists, then it wouldn't have any problem with a film that depicted them, because it would be just as opposed to them as anybody else and wanting to root them out of the communities. But that was not the case.
No, it wasn't. And you brought up another interesting point, the organization CARE. Could you explain a little bit about them, sir?
That's the leading civil rights advocacy group for Muslims in the United States. At least that's their self-description. And that's the description that the mainstream media uncritically repeats about them. In any story, virtually any story about a jihad terror attack or about the war on the freedom of speech or any of these related issues, you will find the mainstream media going to a spokesman for CARE to get comment. Now, the problem with that is that CARE has been demonstrated by the Justice Department to have ties to Hamas, ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, and several of its officials have been convicted of terrorism-related charges. Some of them are in jail now. Has opposed every counterterror measure that has ever been proposed or implemented in the United States. It has advised its members not to talk to the FBI, not to cooperate with counterterror legal initiatives. And so this is the group that's supposed to be some sort of mainstream civil rights advocacy group for moderate Muslims in the United States. It's actually anything but. It's a Hamas-linked Muslim Brotherhood front group that is really actively working so that counterterror measures would be ended and the jihad could advance unimpeded and unopposed.
I don't have the statistics in front of me right now, but I believe I saw a report from the Justice Department showing that the number of hate crimes, quote unquote, against Muslims is almost non-existent in this country now.
Yes. Now, of course, no hate crime is justified, but the fact is that there are very few, and that we hear very little about anti-Semitism in the United States, and yet anti-Semitic hate crimes are 8 times more common, according to FBI statistics, than hate crimes against Muslims. And so there really ought to be quite a bit more attention to anti-Semitism, including Islamic anti-Semitism, rather than all the exaggerated attention to Islamophobia that we see from the mainstream media.
I think there was a campus, I remember reading about a university where a student was running for the council to be placed on it, and she was rejected because she was Jewish.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember what school that was, but I do believe there was something to that effect. And, of course, we see all over on campuses nowadays initiatives from the Muslim student groups and leftist student groups to get BDS onto campus, that is, boycott, divestment, and sanction, that any kind of investment into Israeli companies be ended on the part of the university. And this is something that's very much like the Nazi movements in the early 30s to get Germans to boycott Jewish-owned businesses. And it ultimately proceeds from the same kind of anti-Semitic impulses. The idea is, of course, that really they're just reacting to the supposed atrocities of the State of Israel. But most of the evidentiary material that they produce is just Palestinian jihad propaganda that was trumped up in order to demonize Israel and to advance the genocidal agenda that the Palestinian Authority and Hamas have, to eliminate Israel altogether and to clear that area of Jews, which would mean killing millions and millions of people.
I believe the Hamas, which rules the Gaza Strait, the Gaza Strip, and Fatah, which rules the West Bank, both of them in their charters still to this day call for the eradication of the State of Israel.
That's correct. And they have repeatedly refused in treaties by various presidents of the United States and others to recognize that Israel has any right to exist. Barack Obama, of course, has aggressively ignored that and not made the recognition, any genuine recognition of Israel on the part of the Palestinians, to be anything upon which these so-called peace negotiations depend upon. In the past, it had been something that was supposed to be a prerequisite for a lasting peace, that the Palestinians had to recognize Israel's right to exist. But in any case, they have not and are not going to, because it would not be in accord with the Islamic Jihad agenda.
And I point out also that the State of Israel is the only working democracy. It is multi-ethnic. It practices religious toleration. Muslims are part of the government there, as are Druze and Christians. No other country in that region has that kind of diversity.
Yes. And, well, this is because, of course, Israel is a Western-style republic, whereas the surrounding Muslim states are in line with Islam, essentially authoritarian. And consequently, they don't have any idea of rights for minorities and equality of rights for non-Muslims and so on. There's no country, as a matter of fact, no Muslim country today in which non-Muslims enjoy full equality of rights with Muslims.
What's coming up next for Jihad Watch? Are we going to be seeing more of the demonstrations, for example, like with the Draw Muhammad? Are we going to be doing more?
Yeah, we're gonna do our best to keep going and hold more events of this kind and keep standing for the freedom of speech. Right now, everything is very fluid, and the death fatwa has, of course, made us have to take additional security measures, and we're working on that. But we're not stopping our work. We're going to keep going and keep advancing.
And people can learn more about your organization online at jihadwatch.com, correct?
Jihadwatch.org, yes.
I beg your pardon, jihadwatch.org. And Pamela Geller's, she has her own site, I believe, at PamelaGeller.org.
Yes, PamelaGeller.com.
Okay, I got my .coms and my .orgs confused.
Yes.
Mr. Spencer, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me and to speak with our audience. And let's keep up the good fight, sir.
Absolutely. You too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. World Lutheran News Digest will return right after these messages.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join us for Issues Etc. weekday afternoons from 3 to 5. Issues Etc. is a live call-in show with a twofold purpose. First, we defend and teach the truths rediscovered during the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. Second, we challenge today's postmodern culture with its unbiblical ideology.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO Radio.
There's a special place where rare books from times long ago come alive in your imagination. A special place where you can rediscover values that transcend time itself. A special place of adventure, mystery, and drama that's both old and new at the same time. Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
Hi, I'm Pastor Mark Hawkinson, host of Moments of Assurance, Sunday at 9:15 a.m. right here on KFUO Radio. Each week I have the privilege of producing a quarter hour of message, music, and prayer blended together to fit a special theme for that day. You'll hear messages of hope and complete confidence in Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord. You'll hear choirs and instrumentals to support the message as well. So I invite you to join me. That's Moments of Assurance, Sunday morning at 9:15 a.m.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.